next case is 09-1231, Dayton Bar Association versus Keith Brown. Brown is not, apparently not here, so Mr. Rickert, on behalf of the Dayton Bar Association, you may argue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, if it pleases the court, David Rickert for the Dayton Bar Association, the relator in this case. At the risk of sounding flippant, with the absence of Mr. Brown, all I can say is welcome to this case. He has frankly been missing in action throughout this grievance proceeding, almost entirely. He did file objections, which is part of what brings here us here today. But he has basically not cooperated in this proceeding at all. With the objections, there are really two issues on the table for today's discussion, one a procedural one, one a substantive one. Procedurally, in the objections, Mr. Brown asserts that he was unaware of the proceedings and unable to attend the proceedings. I don't believe that's accurate for at least three or four reasons. First, he was aware of the grievance. He was contacted by the investigator. He refused to come to Dayton from Indianapolis, where he had moved, to address the complaint and to cooperate with the investigator. He also refused to attend the invitation he received to meet with the entire grievance committee. It was rescheduled to try to accommodate his schedule, but he didn't attend the rescheduled date. So clearly he knew at all times that these complaints were out there on behalf of both of these complainants. Second of all, he is, of course, obligated to maintain an accurate registered address with this court. All of the proceedings in this case were sent to the Carvel Avenue address, which is the address he left with the court. And under the governance rule 6-1D, if he didn't receive any notice of these proceedings, clearly that's his fault and frankly no one else's.
Have you had any contact with him at all during the course of these proceedings?
No, Your Honor. I did attempt, frankly, to track him down. We found him listed on a website where it listed a different address on Shelby Street in Indianapolis. We did try contacting my phone. We did try sending copies of the amended complaint to that address, and frankly, just never got a response. So again, I think he has voluntarily made himself inaccessible to this court. Of course, under the governance rule 511B, for out-of-state counsel, the clerk can be the avenue of service, and so it was also service was affected through that means with regard to these proceedings here today. Fourth, and I think most importantly, I think the proof's in the pudding. He did have contact with the committee, although he was claiming it was basically an imposition on him to have to come to Dayton from Indianapolis to participate in that investigation. Somehow he filed objections here. He knew this proceeding was going on. They were timely filed. They were properly filed. He attached to those objections the certificate of registration that we have to fill out every 2 years for the 2009-2011 biennium. That was addressed to the Carvel Avenue address that he had on registered with this court. He only changed that address about 6 or 7 weeks ago. So somehow he received notice of these proceedings, filed the objections, but as we can see here today, that's been the extent.
Well, counsel, his solution to this problem, I guess, is to allow him to go through or finish this course of rehabilitation and deal with his substance abuse problems, and in the meantime, allow him to go inactive as opposed to an indefinite suspension.
Right.
And would you address that? Why not you would oppose that?
Sure. I guess for two reasons, Judge. First, there is precious little in the record, and certainly he has not submitted any evidence in terms of his substance abuse issues. So in terms of the record before this court, there really is nothing other than the claim that he was involved in a facility in some way, shape, or form. Second of all, I believe if he's allowed to go inactive, clearly he can't practice law, and we've resolved that issue. But especially given his intent to go from Indianapolis to Florida, which he expressed, I'm concerned, frankly, that there'd be no record of any disciplinary proceedings, no trail. He could conceivably then just go ahead and apply in Florida if he wanted to resume the practice of law. He could honestly say that he'd not been disciplined by the court. I think there's problems with exporting our problems somewhere else and saying, well, at least he won't practice in Ohio anymore. He's evidenced in his objections an intent to go back to Florida. Interestingly, he did not say he wouldn't practice in Florida. He just says for the time being he's got no intention to practice. I just think it's bad practice for us to say, well, if he promises not to do it here in Ohio, we'll just sort of let it go at that.
And if he goes inactive, we don't have any rule that says he can't reactivate it here in Ohio and get back in, and we don't have any control over that.
Certainly. Can resume practice here once he reactivates and can go to another state and reapply. And
if we do an indefinite, then he has to go through the fitness and character and rehabilitation and fulfill all the obligations.
Exactly, and presumably have to make a disclosure in any other state that he'd been subject of discipline here. So procedurally, I think this matter is properly before this court for consideration. Substantively, really both of these complaints involve sort of the same conduct. They were elderly people who'd been put in touch with him from a financial advisor or in the Laverne Smith's case, going to a seminar. The advice was, and what he was hired to do, was to create a trust and transfer, among other things, their real property into the trust. In both cases, he created the trust but never transferred the real property, and so didn't fulfill the terms that he was hired to perform. There was prejudice in both of these cases. In the one case, Laverne Smith, her husband passed away, and the property interest that he had that was supposed to be in trust, in fact, now had to go through the probate process, and she incurred extra costs and efforts to have to resolve that issue. In the case of Donna Upton, they had to make some changes to their retirement plans and issues because of Medicare clawback issues that they now had to deal with because the trust was not created. I'm sorry, the property was not transferred into the trust. In the case of the Uptons, they actually did manage to contact Mr. Brown. He promised them repeatedly that he was going to fix this. He was going to get the property transferred into trust. For about a year and a half, he didn't do that. They finally had to hire other counsel and take care of it that way. In the case of Smith, they actually went to a different attorney to correct the problem, incurred some extra expense in that regard, and most significantly in the case of the Smiths, Mrs. Smith received two affidavits from him that he wanted her to sign to help effect this transfer that had already been notarized and witnessed by him before she signed it. She received them pre-notarized and pre-witnessed, which is not, frankly, acceptable practice. So the conclusion by the Board of Commissioners was that under the Code of Professional Responsibility, which governed the Smith matter, he engaged in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation, engaged in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice, engaged in conduct adversely reflecting the lawyer's fitness to practice law, and failed to attend to, he neglected an entrusted legal matter. Under the Upton case, basically, the same sort of offenses were found under the new rules of professional conduct since that occurred after February 1 of 07. Looking at the mitigating and aggravating factors, which the commissioners did, the only mitigating factor was there had been no prior violations, but the aggravating factors were there were multiple instances of this conduct. They occurred to basically more vulnerable people, older people who were depending on him to imminently facilitate their estate planning needs. There's been no restitution, and so the commissioners recommended an indefinite suspension, and I would ask the court to adopt those recommendations at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Rickard.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.